This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Going to be with you till 6 o'clock tonight. Matt Patrick here. Patrick, we are keeping an eye out for the pardon list. I'm actually fairly shocked we have not had this yet because he's got to have these things done. I can imagine he's just sitting there belly aching about having so many things I got to sign, so much work. Can someone give me a cheeseburger? I'm getting tired. That is going to be my guess. Actually, there is a story out that I've heard echoes of this for the last few weeks. His legal advisors, Trump has been, they're trying to sway him from pardoning his children as well as Republican lawmakers who encouraged insurrectionists at the Capitol. According to CNN, Trump, along with Ivanka and Jared, listened in as White House counsel Pat Cipollone and Eric Hirschman said that the only way he could pardon himself, his family, and the GOP members is if he listed out the crimes that they had committed. Listing the crimes of the pardon would essentially give prosecutors a guide to how to charge the Trumps on state levels or on civil crimes, which do not fall under the auspices of a pardon. So while it was something that Trump has discussed with the legal advisors before and former Attorney General Bill Barr, this time apparently Trump got the message. So now that's just we're hearing that kind of rumor hearsay through the wall sort of thing. But it does make a lot of sense. Which, by the way, do you know what part of that story, Patrick, really kind of like, oh my God, is the fact that he is thinking about there's enough of a crime here with the Republican lawmakers who encourage the insurrectionists that if he pardons them, there will be enough to charge them on state crimes or on civil matters. That there is enough. That's not smoke, that's fire. There's enough fire there that these guys, that there is something far more sinister going on with that insurrection attempt on the 6th than is being told. Because why else, why else would they need to pardon these guys if not for the fact they had committed crimes and they knowingly had done so? So we'll have to see. There still is a lot of people who have said legally that it would be impossible for him to, he cannot pardon himself. That it just, the Constitution is pretty clear that he has no ability to pardon himself. And so that pardon would probably get thrown out anyway. And then if he pardoned himself and that pardon got thrown out, he'd still have to list in the pardon what he had done wrong, which basically then makes it should we just get out the plea agreement right now? Should we just start filing the plea agreement?
Isn't a pardon an admission of guilt if you really think about it?
No, it is. You have to accept a pardon, and this is something that all these Trump people are like, that's not true. Yes, it is. To accept a pardon, you have to admit you committed the crime. You cannot give a pardon to someone with it, A, being this vague, in case they did something wrong, they can't. I mean, people point back to Carter. Carter pardoned all the people that fled to Canada to avoid the Vietnam War. But he specifically pardoned the crime of AWOL, of not reporting for duty, not, disobeying the draft. That was the specific crime. You cannot just go out there and say, if this person, say Mo Brooks is a Republican who a lot of people have pointed to as a point person for a lot of the insurrectionists. Mo Brooks might have or might not have done something that might have got the insurrectionists going and might have done something. But we're going to, that's what the pardon is, just in case he had done something. No, you cannot say that. You have to say Mo Brooks, and I'm making this up. Mo Brooks specifically brought these people there to try to overthrow the government. You have to say that. And, you know, so, you know, and I know that his lawyers have looked at him and said, don't even try to pardon yourself, because if you do, you have to list the crimes and the pardon's going to get thrown out. And so you just admitted to all your crimes and you're going to get, you're going to go to jail. So, but now it seems like, you know, the rest of them are understanding the gravity here. We're hoping that sometime before 6 o'clock tonight, we will have a pardon update. Yeah. Oh, apparently the only one that aired his final goodbye was Newsmax. So long. Bon voyage. Don't let the door hit you in the... Well, let the door hit you in the... you know. Off you go. There is someone who actually asked me a question, because the headline today is talking about how 400,000 have died. And the numbers that I am posting every morning on my Twitter account... And on the Facebook page, Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show, the pictures, the numbers I am posting come from Worldometers. The methodology at Worldometers seems to be better than, I mean, there definitely seems the official CDC numbers, that they release seem to be squelched, and they're about 10,000 deaths behind where Worldometers is. Plus there are other American citizens that are not being counted for some reason in the CDC numbers. I don't know why. So Worldometer has got it at 408,000 people have died. The official number now is 400,000 people. Someone had asked me why there's a difference. That's the difference. Why? I'll stand by Worldometer's number. I think that they're actually more akin to it. But now even the toned down numbers have it at almost as many people who's died at World War II. So yeah. I'm going to spend the first part of the show here reviewing the legacy of Trump. And I want to start off by doing the five goofiest things this guy did. He did a lot of atrocious stuff, but these five things, hands down, I think, I mean, were the goofiest things that he did, that if it was Barack Obama and he had ever done one of these things that was one-tenth as goofy as this, that for a year, they'd be like this, and the Republicans would be like, oh, look at him, he did that goofy thing. If you think I'm lying, Republicans still today talk about Al Gore invented the internet. That is something, that is just who they are. But they don't want to pay attention to any of this. The first one, do you remember the image he posted of him meeting the Pope? Now, I understand that you probably had to release that image. But a scowling Francis, who clearly did not want to meet with you. I mean, seriously, that guy, the look on the Pope's face when he had to meet with Trump, it was like, oh my God. Quite literally. I mean, it's the Pope. So I would say the Pope's the photo shoot with the Pope, because that is some shade. And not just from the big pointy hat. I mean, that is some serious shade. Number two, the Big Mac, or number four would be Big Macs for Everyone. The second one on my list, the number four on the list, Big Macs for Everyone, where we had the government shutdown. He still wanted to welcome the football team there. And he basically gets McDonald's to bring over all this food and put it in the Madison silver and the Jefferson gravy boat. And they put it all out. And Trump is out there taking photos with all the Big Macs and all this stuff. And he's so happy. No one decided to keep the food warm. And every football player that came through that said everything was just ice cold by the time they got through. I said, I would rather not have done this if I know my whole meal was going to be an ice cold Big Mac. So there's number four on the list. Number three, the orb. You remember that? 2017, he heads to the Middle East to meet the Legion of Doom. And for some weird reason, they brought out this orb, which is bottom lit, so everyone looks like a villain in a horror film. And they all put their hands on the orb. and they thought this was a good picture. And it just, it was Legion of Doom stuff, man. That is just, and that was when he was, you know, dictator curious, and he was willing to go, and he was hanging out with some of the worst people on the planet, and they're all sitting there with their hands on the orb. Number two, the hurricane. So a hurricane's going to hit Florida, and For some reason, Trump says, oh, better look out Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama. And the National Weather Service goes back and says, wait a minute, is this thing supposed to hit Alabama? I don't think it's supposed to hit Alabama. And the National Weather Service, who is the authority when it comes to storms and projections, puts out the fact that, no, this is not going to hit Alabama. It never was going to hit Alabama. And Trump had, and so they had to put out a correction. The National Weather Service actually put out a correction that said, no, this is not going to be hitting Alabama. It's just basically going to stay pretty much on the eastern coast of Florida. To which Trump said, no, I said it was going to hit Alabama. It's going to hit Alabama. So someone in the White House grabbed a weather map. First, they had one of the weather maps blown up. And they weren't smart enough to just basically Photoshop the image before they blew it up. They just blew it up, realized they weren't wrong, and someone took a Sharpie and on the cone of strikeability put a little lump on it just so the very southeastern part of Alabama was included in the hurricane zone. And Trump held it up and said, see, look over here. Look, this hasn't been a doctored map at all. I don't know who put the black marker Sharpie on it, but look at there. I was right. Whew. Wow. There's number two. Number one, and the reason why this was just spectacular, it was a few reasons. One, we all remember when Fox News and Republican politicians demanded that Obama step down from office because he bowed too deeply, I think it was to the Japanese prime minister. And they said, look at what he just did. He just bowed. He surrendered the United States to the Japanese because he bowed too deeply. Now, it was ludicrous. It was clearly, I miss having a president where they have so little to stick to this guy that they have to go on out there and work really hard. Dijon mustard, latte salutes, umbrellas, tanzuits. They have to work as hard as they did to vilify him. But that was one of those that they put out there, that you should never bow down to a foreign leader. Donald Trump goes to meet the North Koreans and at one point salutes the North Korean general that's in there. Not the North Korean despot. No, one of his generals, one of his subordinates. Trump goes over there and salutes him. It showed you how much he was willing to cower to dictators just for a chance to feel like he'd been successful. But it's just so damn goofy. I'm U.S. Army. I'm wearing the Army shirt right today. I'm U.S. Army. The subordinate salutes the higher-ranking officer. So that when Donald Trump quite literally saluted the Korean general, the Korean general basically became his boss. And these were things, I have to remind you of these things. I have to remind you of this stuff. Because it was so buried under mile after mile after mile of just pure crap. That I got to remind you of just the stupid, goofy stuff he did. I'm going to take a break. When I come on back, there is a very good breakdown here. I want to take some time here to talk about the Trump term and how bad it was. And there's an excellent review here by Greg O'Lear of Prevail that I want to get into. That I'll read this for you, and I think it's pretty spot on how bad you have to label Trump and this administration. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Gary Bear, let's go. Let's get Gary in Minneapolis here before I get into this next segment. Hey, Gary, welcome on into the show.
Hey, Matt, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I bet you are, too.
Just a smidge.
I was just going to say, I can recall that old conservative term, love it or leave it, and maybe Trump and his groupies should head on to his friend over in North Korea, Putin in Russia. What do you think?
If he does not pardon himself, and thanks, Gary, I appreciate the phone call. If he doesn't pardon himself or his kids, I have a feeling those people are going to be leaving the country, I mean, probably to Russia or maybe one of the former Russian republics, and stay there, and they'll never come back. And then just because they know that if they do, they'll be charged with crime. So, it's going to be interesting to see. I have never been one of these people that, because there always are people like, he won, I'm leaving. And I've known some people that have actually left the country because of politicians, George W. Bush. But the reality is I love America and I love what it stands for, which is interesting because I think we don't appreciate how close we came to losing democracy as a whole here. For God's sakes, we just on the 6th had a presidentially led incursion to try to overthrow the Congress. People that were looking to kill the vice president, Speaker of the House, probably Mitch McConnell, any other congressperson they could get their hands on, and throw out an election and install Trump as dictator for life. There is no way in the world this country would have survived another 4 years of this. Which it's time now for us to place, where is Donald Trump deserve to be in the annals of history? The anus of history. I wrote about this, a few months back or maybe a year ago, and I just sort of said there how you can even think about putting him anywhere but the last worst president we've ever had. I don't know. I mean, Buchanan was bad, but Trump kind of, trumps him. I'm going to go to Greg O'Lear at Prevail. Today is the last day of the worst presidency the country has endured. Sure, we've had some clunkers. George W. Bush presided over the deadliest terror attack on American soil, wasted $1 trillion on a needless war that went with the wrong enemy, and came close to creating the entire global catering the entire global economy. Herbert Hoover did bupkis to stem the Great Depression. Warren G. Harding wrote love letters to paramours while his corrupt subordinates plundered and looted. Andrew Johnson got himself impeached. Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan did nothing to redress slavery or heal the South-North Rift. And those guys are basically a six-headed Mount Rushmore compared to Donald Trump. Trump's term in office began with an assault on the truth. The first time Sean Spicer, the newly minted press secretary, addressed the White House press corps, he lied about the size of the crowd at the inauguration. And he did so at the new president's behest. Spicer may as well have been standing next to Shaquille O'Neal insisting he was taller. We knew he was lying. He knew he was lying. The press corps knew he was lying. Saturday Night Live certainly knew he was lying. Even Chuck Todd, not a journalistic paragon himself, took exception to it in what turned to be a historic episode of Meet the Press. There was uneasiness, certainty, and plenty of jokes made at Spencer's expense. But few imagine this pathetic spectacle would merely be the opening salvo of 4 years of an onslaught against reality. We were told that Trump's campaign was self-funded. It wasn't. We were told he would drain the swamp. He didn't even try. We were told that he would bring his successful businessman's experience to Washington. Few bothered to report that Trump's actual business involves laundering money for the Russian mob. We were told Jared and Ivanka would be moderating influence. They were more ghoulish and evil than Donald. We were told Trump would release his taxes. The alleged audit has outlasted his presidency. We were told he would release Melania's immigration paperwork. We are still waiting. We were told that the caravan of immigrants gangs approaching the border was a threat to our safety. Crickets. There are promises of a better health care plan than Obamacare. The promise in 2-week details that we yet to be revealed. We were told Trump was the healthiest person of all time ever. He isn't. We were told he was 6'3", 239. He is well shorter than 6'3", and he's far heavier than 239. We were told in the midnight run to Walter Reed last November, it was his first part of a physical, which a cover story even the press seemed to realize was absolute garbage. We still don't know why he was rushed there. Was it a panic attack, stents, exorcism? We were told there was no communication between anyone associated with Trump and his campaign in Russia. Turns out Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, Michael Cohen, Jeff Sessions, Mike Flynn, Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, and Eric Prince, at a minimum, all communicated with Putin's representatives. We were told there was no foreign money coming into the Trump coffers. Egypt gave $10 million. We were told the Mueller investigation was a witch hunt. It was actually a hunt for traitors, and it found plenty. We were told Trump would be tough on Putin. He capitulated to him like a BDSM victim in the world's least sexy bondage club. I like that. That's good imagery. We were told the novel coronavirus was like the flu. We were told it was a hoax. We were told it was under control. We were told it would be gone by Easter. We were told that one day it would go away just like a miracle. We were told the Democratic governors were to blame. We were told Fauci was not to be trusted. We were told the CDC was not to be trusted. Instead, we should put our faith in Michael Caputo, a GOP dirty trickster who once worked for Vladimir Putin and whom Trump installed as a spokesman at the Health and Human Services. We were told Mike Pence, who was a governor of Indiana, presided over the worst HOV outbreak in the last 20 years. Would be the best man to manage the pandemic response. No. We were told that he did a fantastic job. We were told masks didn't work, that wearing them was government overreach, an assault on our freedoms. We were told it was safe to reopen. We were told herd immunity was a smart strategy. We were told that certain already available drugs treated COVID-19 just fine. We were told the infection rate would be lower if we did less testing. We were told the virus wasn't especially contagious, even as it spread like wildfire through the West Wing. When Trump announced he had tested positive COVID-19, the universal first response was to, you know, call him out and say, no. Really? We were told the effects were not that bad, even as Chris Christie spent a week in the ICU, even as Herman Cain died. We were told the Trump administration's handling of the pandemic was top rate, even as acting president Jared Kushner authorized a blue state genocide. We were told that the pandemic was over, even as the death toll hit 400,000, that Biden would shut down the country on January 21st because he's a pawn to China, who will use the virus as an excuse to establish a communist government in Washington. And now, cleft by 4 years of psychological battering ram, reality is broken. Alternative facts prevail. There's no universal agreed upon truth. There is exactly what the KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov warned us back in 1984, that the Russians were trying to do this via psychological welfare, change the perception of reality for every American to such an extent that despite the abundance of information, no one is able to come to a sensible conclusion. Well, mission accomplished, comrades. As it stands, Trump leaves with over 400,000 dead, with the federal government in shambles, with our standing around the world at its lowest point since the Great War, and with the U.S. in an additional $8 trillion in debt. The actual debt is $27.86 trillion, to be exact, and that was just up from under the $20 trillion when he took office. And it should be noted, once again, they were constantly, incessantly attacking Barack Obama for the deficit. They've made it $8 trillion worse, said nothing while they made it, and they knew they made it worse. And guess what? All of a sudden now Republicans are starting to, we need to deal with this deficit. Oh, yeah. Deficits only matter for Republicans when Democrats are in office. Let's just make sure we understand that. By any metric, he has been a catastrophic failure, corrupt, sociopathic, cruel, disruptive, evil. We have never had a monster like this in the White House. No one comes close. The last 2 weeks have shown beyond shadow of doubt that 4 more years of Trump would have brought about the end of the American experiment. As hopeful as I've been looking back, I'm amazed that we did it, that we didn't reelect this petty tyrant and seal our doom. The good news is horrible presidents can give way to great ones. Franklin Roosevelt took over after a hapless Hoover before John Trump came along. James Buchanan was widely considered the worst president in U.S. history. Who succeeded Buchanan? Abraham Lincoln. Because he's taken control of a nation in crisis like FDR and Honest Abe before him, Joe Biden is primed to be historically great president. But at this point, I think we'd all settle for just decent. And he does seem to be a pretty decent guy. I've already read one. There was an analysis too by one of the Harvard historians who said it's not debatable that Donald Trump is absolutely the worst. And we're going to take a break. When I do come back, I want to talk about why it's important we do not allow people to go out and just state, oh, he was great, he was wonderful. You can't allow that. And I'll explain that why when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick Kulikin, by the way, from Minnesota Reformer, he's going to join Brett coming up here in a little bit. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Tangled in one bunk because we can't sleep. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Lisa bringing up the concentration camps that Trump has built on our border. Got to remember, there's going to be a day of reckoning on that. I'll never forget just the horror and anger when I read that there were forced hysterectomies on immigrant women at a shelter in Georgia, and reading about a year earlier about the company that they contracted with in Arizona who didn't even run background checks to make sure sexual predators were not on their guard staff. And apparently sexual predators were on the guard staff and had sexually violated young girls within the facility. And there is going to be hell to pay for all this. And it becomes increasingly important that we don't allow history to be rewritten by people that are desperate to make their loyalty to Trump something more than just an absolute abomination. I have talked, Patrick, have you ever heard me talk about a man named Harry Truman? Not that Harry Truman. The other guy named Harry Truman. Do you know who I'm talking about?
The guy from Washington, St. Helens.
Mount St. Helens guy, Washington guy. So if you go to Mount St. Helens, which I encourage you to do as far as a place to visit, it's actually quite spectacular to see. You go to Mount St. Helens, and as you're there, you get to hear the story of this guy, Harry Truman, who had a lodge on a lake that was below Mount St. Helens. And when the U.S. Geological Society realized, oh, this is going to blow, they were desperately trying to get everyone out of the area. And this guy, Harry S. Truman, and this is basically how it's paraphrased, he stared down the mountain. Well, how'd that go for him? Apparently, Harry S. Truman and about 40 cats he had at this lodge are probably under about 150 foot of rock, soil, and dirt. The way he chose to go out in life was to be blasted by a volcano, roasted alive, unable to breathe because of toxic chemicals, as he's on fire, buried under tons of rock. You know, I can think of a few ways I want to go out, Patrick. I don't want to go out that way.
Feel worse for the cats.
Well, the cats really didn't have a choice, did they? That would be great. Where are all the cats gone? They're like, oh, we're out of here. Bye. You can feed us all day long. We're scampering away. This is not someone we should look up. I understand folklore and mythology. No, he was an idiot. He was an idiot who in 500,000 years, an alien's going to come on down here, start excavating by Mount St. Helens, and they're going to find this old corpse like it's Pompeii, you know, this guy there, and say, wow, why didn't he leave? You know, that was a pretty stupid move, wasn't it? I also have gone to Fort Sumter. You know Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor out in South Carolina, right?
Oh, sure do.
Have you ever been out there visiting?
I have not. I've been thinking about it.
Well, Charleston is magnificent. If you do go, let me know beforehand. I'll tell you about the good places to go eat. Charleston's got great restaurants.
when things are all open again.
That's just what I want to hear.
The Crew Cafe. I got to send a Crew Cafe for the mac and cheese. It's amazing. So, but you should go on out there. It's a bit to get out there. On the way out, you actually pass what was kind of a fortifications for the Revolutionary War. You got to forget South Carolina had a pretty strong role in the Revolutionary War as well. And so you go out to Fort Sumter and you go through the tour here. And of course, I could not help but openly laugh and mock when we were on the tour. The idea that was put forward by the tour guide on the Fort Snelling tour or the Fort Sumter tour, that as Sherman's troops turned north from Savannah and marched into South Carolina, the tactical decision was made by the South Carolina Confederates to concede the fort, and they left it for the Northerners. Whoa, what are you talking about? We're just going to let them have it. We're going to be the better people. We're going to let them have it. They want it so bad, we'll just let them have it. First of all, they didn't want to give up that fort because that was the symbol of the entire insurrection for them. But the idea that these people just got in their boat and saluted as they rode back. No. This is my impression of them. As Sherman, who has destroyed Atlanta, he picked Georgia up on his hands and broke Georgia over his knee. And then he got mad and went to South Carolina. So here's really what the Confederates were like as Sherman marched towards Charleston. Ah! Run away, run away. He's going to kill us. Run away. There's your brave Confederate soldiers. They ran for their lives. They ran like little cowards. They ran away. Which let them have it. But you see, these people will put out this bull crap, and it becomes like, well, I guess that's what happened. No, that's not what happened. Ah, I want to live. They ran for their lives. Well, we're already seeing some grade A manure shoveling going on by certain members of the right, including Fox Business News anchor Maria Bartiromo, who's attempting to blame the U.S. Capitol riots on Democrats who infiltrated the federal building wearing Make America Great Again clothing. Now, it seems to get past this woman that pretty much everyone who's been arrested so far has said, oh no, I was there for Trump, and has a long history of being a MAGA guy. But you see, that little fact doesn't seem to ignore them because they're trying desperately to rewrite what actually happened. As she discussed the reports about possible threats of right-wing violence looming over the upcoming presidential inauguration of Biden, she falsely said that Democrats participated in the Capitol riots, according to Media Matters. During the broadcast, Bartiromo said, the new report says that some far-right protesters have discussed posting as members of the National Guard to infiltrate the inauguration the way the Democrats infiltrated 2 weeks ago and put on MAGA clothing. That's a lie. That's not just kind of a lie. That's a bold-faced, unbelievable, wow, just obnoxious lie. And Bartiromo knows that she'll say this, and a lot of people are like, see, I know it wasn't true. It wasn't our guys, even though I cheered them on. I was happy, and I know four guys that were there. It wasn't them. It was those Democrats. They used a voodoo witch charm on us. No, it was you. It was MAGA guys. You can't allow people to rewrite this. And I have had discussion after discussion with Republicans who will make the comment, Donald Trump done more than any other president ever. Now, if you look at Trump's record and you try to find anything that doesn't have a really bad, deep, bad side to it, it's virtually impossible to find anything. The one thing that does, and this is goofy, the one thing that does seem to be a pretty good thing is, and I can't even believe I'm saying this, the working with Kim Kardashian on the criminal reform bill. That was a pretty good bill, but it was basically spoon-fed to him. Outside of that, he hasn't done anything. He drained the swamp. No, he didn't. For God's sakes, it's swampier than ever, thanks to a lot of his guys who he keeps installing, trying to hope that they stay in office so they can thwart Biden in his efforts. He gave a massive tax break. Well, no, he didn't. The tax break went to the millionaires and the billionaires. Pretty much no one, middle class, lower class, got anything outside of a pittance of a tax break. And here's where the kick in the old, lower extremities comes on in. They wrote the bill. Trump passed this bill. This Trump tax cut bill had a poison pill in it that come 2021, that the middle and lower class had to pay higher taxes to offset the amount of money given to the wealthiest people. That was written in the bill. And get ready, folks. Everyone get ready for Republicans screaming about it. Democrats are raising your taxes. No. This is your bill. You did this. You need the Democrats to fix it. And of course, what they're going to demand is you got to get rid of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. You got to get rid of them. You can't ever touch the tax breaks we've given to millionaires and billionaires who never really needed them anyway. Trade policy? For God's sakes. I'll get to the manufacturing here in a little bit, but his trade policy? Come on. He's annihilated our ag markets. Do you realize we've had to give farmers massive socialist stimulus checks just so they can survive? And by the way, mostly only the large farms. The large farmers are the only ones that are getting that stuff. But they're getting massive handouts from the federal government. Socialism. We have socialist agriculture in this country because he's annihilated their markets. And when he was doing this, and the Chinese are like, all right, fine, we'll just go call Brazil. We'll just call Argentina. We'll call Australia. We'll get them to start growing our crops. Thank you very much. Vietnam. People were begging Trump, go to India, go to Africa, work out new trade agreements with these countries. And he was like, I'm not going to work with those countries. China's going to bow to China's found new market. Oh, okay. You think it's bad now, and when we are having to send out trillions of dollars in farm aid, you think it's bad now. Imagine what it's going to be like when the Chinese really cut off our markets. And they're not going to come back for decades. He stopped immigrants. He stopped immigration. No, he didn't. For God's sakes, he's not even gotten close. His border wall is a laughingstock. People can cut through it. People can climb over it. It's not impenetrable. Most people are coming via planes anyway. And on top of it, to build the thing, he declared a national emergency, which, by the way, that's going to come bite you Republicans in the ass huge with future Democratic presidents. He declared a national emergency and stole money from the military's housing expenditure account to build his wall. The pandemic. I went through that laundry list of things that he's done. He's been horrible. We are not the best country. It wouldn't be so much worse. If you talk to healthcare professionals, it's hard to imagine how it could be worse in the United States. He has been a failure at everything he has done. He did not deliver cheaper, better health care. As a matter of fact, health care costs have, after reversing all those years under Obama, have started to skyrocket again under President Trump. Taking care of the environment, please. Got us out of the Paris Accord. He's handed over national parks for drilling. He's put forward useless projects that basically only benefit the extremely wealthy producers of shale oil and you know, big despot mining operations. There is nothing he has done unless you look at him. Criminal justice reform, he did do that. The only other thing he really did was he told the cockroach racists that you don't have to hide your racism anymore. That after all these decades, you can come out of from under the fridge and you can be as racist as you want to be. And if that is a main guiding principle for you, if that is a main bullet point on your daily list of things you've got to be, then yeah, you think he is wonderful. Because he's made your racism acceptable again. And you might not be the racist who's throwing a sheet on or burning a cross. You might be just one of those people that laughs when the N-word is said. Or likes to make jokes about LGBTQ people. It still is racism. And that's why you love the guy. Is basically, it's not that you're wrong and inappropriate. It's that the rest of the world is wrong and inappropriate because they don't understand how funny it is to mock and ridicule minorities. So you fall somewhere on the gamut, the range of racism. That's why you love the guy. Or unless you're a millionaire or billionaire because, yeah, he shovels tons of money into your account. And I guess I can understand why that is that as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got to make a plea to Mike Lindell here when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Okay, I want to take a moment here to talk to MyPillow's CEO, Mike Lindell. Dude, I think you're a nutbag. I really do. But I want to be careful here. I don't want to see your company and all the jobs it has disappear. And I think you don't seem to understand that those Minnesota jobs are going to probably disappear if you get sued into by Dominion into oblivion. Which it looks like they're probably going to do. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell responded to a major retailer's pulling his product in an effort to distance themselves about his claims about voting fraud on Tuesday. He's less worried about his business than he is about the U.S. presidential election. Kohl's, Wayfair, HEB, Bed Bath & Beyond are ending their supplier relationship with Chaska-based MyPillow for now. These evil left-wing groups that get hired to cancel out companies, they're not going to hurt MyPillow. You're going to hurt these big box stores. Dude, it's not them, and I don't know if they necessarily even exist. What I will say, it's you. You are becoming toxic. When you talk about martial law, that's becoming toxic. A left-leaning activist group, Sleeping Giants, did pressure retailers to stop selling MyPillow merchandise, but it's unclear whether the companies responded directly to that pressure. I think they responded to martial law calls. Lindell, an outspoken backer of Trump on Friday, spent a few minutes with the president. The White's out. He was photographed going to the West Wing with a document of apparent steps Trump could take to try to remain in power, including invoking martial law. Lindell said executives from several big box stores called him this week to ask him to back down on his claims of election fraud. I said, no, our country is under attack by China. They stole the election. He said he thinks retailers are now distancing from MyPillow will again order its products once they quit getting attacked by the bots and the trolls. In the interview, Lindell asserted his allegations that China hacked the electronic voting systems, including those operated by Dominion voting systems used in the U.S. election. For the next several days, he plans to push forward with those claims. All right. You are worried about whether Bed Bath & Beyond and who else is it? Kohl's and those guys, you're worried on whether or not they're going to come back into your fold and take your product. your far larger concern should be Dominion's impending lawsuit against you. Trump cannot pardon you from a civil trial. And defamation trials are civil trials. So you are not going to get pardoned out of this. That being said, you went to the White House, saw Trump, brought your evidence, which, by the way, the fact that you were actually calling for martial law, even sort of you knew yourself, it's kind of a real far-fetch that you're going to be able to pull this off, but that was what your claim was going to be. You apparently were told by Trump to give your information to Trump's lawyers, which you did. Since that time, no one in the Trump administration has run out the front door with your notes, Mike, and screamed, "We've got the smoking gun! We've got the smoking gun!" Which leads me to believe you had no evidence at all outside of conjecture and hearsay. Which is the problem you guys have had from the beginning, is you don't have any real evidence of anything bad going on. You just think something's going on, and so you want to basically install Trump and then do some sort of detailed investigation. The problem you have is you are going to kiss your company goodbye. If you've got evidence, Mike, and I highly doubt you do, you need to get in front of cameras and show it to everyone now. If you don't, Mike Lindell, Mike, if you do not have evidence, I would encourage you to get those same cameras and start apologizing profusely over and over and over again. Save your company, save those jobs, but it might be too late. We'll hour two up next right here on AM 950.
Going on now at the Electric Fetus. Sell your vinyl in great condition from now through January 24th. The Electric Fetus, 2000 4th Avenue South, Minneapolis, on the corner of 4th and Franklin. More info at electricfetus.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson joining us here in studio. Brett, you had asked a question during the news break there. Why does the president have to release his pardons today? And I think it actually has to do with the last full day of business, because he's not the president by the end of business tomorrow. So he has to, if he's done today, then those pardons become legit. I think there is something about if he doesn't tomorrow, that the incoming president could undo them to a point by the end of the day. So that's why traditionally the pardons are released on the day before before the inauguration.
Boy, the clock's a ticking right now. He's got Eastern time less than 6 hours to get these things done.
There is, of course, a lot of people have said that we talked about this earlier. Don't pardon yourself, because you probably, A, he can't get away with that. That's not legal. You can't do it. It's pretty clear in the Constitution he can't do it. But if you do, if he pardons himself, he pardons his kids. And we actually brought the eyebrow-raising point. If he pardons the people that were involved in the government people, the Congress people, the politicians involved in the insurgency, that you basically open up a roadmap for state governments and for civil courts to sue the living daylights out of you. So they're actually telling him not to, because you cannot just put "in case they committed a crime" on the pardon. You have to list specifically what you're pardoning them for. The real question for you is this: will the Tiger King get pardoned? He is apparently, there is a limo, no joke, there is a stretch limo is waiting out of Joe Exotic's lawyer's office to go pick him up from jail, because they're anticipating one of the pardons will be for the Tiger King.
Honest to God, he already pardoned Blagojevich last year. What would stop him from pardoning this guy if he already did Blago?
We don't want to relive it, but if you've not, when you get to like the fourth episode of that and they have the funeral and he does the sermon, he does the eulogy at the funeral, that would be a reason why you wouldn't do this. But he apparently is, there's an expectation that the Joe Exotic will get pardoned today.
he just intentionally like picks the worst people in the world and says, you know what? Let's pardon this guy.
You gotta put him. I mean, okay, so this guy's a nightmare. And I mean, he really is. And I remember when the Tiger King series came out, I mean, there was nothing that was more perfectly timed for people being sitting at home having to find something to watch than the Tiger King on Netflix. But you, if you do this, you've got to put him in charge of his own place again, because that's what makes, you know, you can't just have him like working at an animal park like anyone would hire him anyway. You have to have his own place. I don't know if that'd even be possible.
Yeah, who would even give him anything after? I suppose he could do another, some sort of reality show. That's probably the route he would go if he got pardoned, is just setting up one of those things. But
it's just a train wreck on a train wreck. Ugh, we'll have to see. Do you think Joe Exotic will be pardoned by the end of the day?
I would have said yes at the start of the day, but if this is true, and it sounds like it is, that he's got to get these done by midnight, I mean, he's still got his bedtime cheeseburgers to get to before those pardons, so he's probably got a lot less than, like, what, 2 or 3 hours? Because I don't know if he's going to be into doing that at 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, I think he's done now. I think there are stories starting to come on out that giving us an idea, just a general vague idea who's gotten pardons. So I'm thinking the pardons are done. When we find out about him, we'll have to find out. I think Joe Exotic's going to be pardoned by the end of the day. I think he's going to pardon the Tiger King. That is disturbing to think about.
Well, maybe, yeah. They're just waiting for the end of the news cycle so they can do it after the national news comes on.
Get the 6 o'clock news done and then basically get him out so that Hannity can say, isn't it great that he's out there and he pardoned the Tiger King? That's a great American right there. All right. Speaking of great Americans, you get this is our weekly visit with the Minnesota Reformer, right?
That's a lot of pressure of a transition right there.
It went from the Tiger King as the great America. I think Patrick Kulikin, we can actually say, is a fine, fine step up from the Tiger King.
Yeah, I would agree.
But if you do get the Tiger King on an interview, my God, let's get that. Book it. Yeah, book it immediately. We'll
bump everything else that
seriously,
day. The Tiger King's
come. Stein, nothing. Tiger King, we're taking that interview. But we have usually once a week we try to get in touch with the Minnesota Reformer, outstanding news organization, one of the best ones in the Twin Cities. And Patrick and you talk today. What are you going to be talking about?
Yeah, so on today's show, what we're going to be talking about is where does the Republican Party of Minnesota go from here? Because obviously they've brought all of these issues on themselves by embracing just the absolute craziness of the extreme parts of their party. So what do they do now as they look forward to trying to knock off walls in 2022? How do they govern when they have all of these crazies in the party? We talk about that and a whole lot else.
Patrick Kulikin, Minnesota Reformer with Brett Johnson, coming up right now here on AM 950.
Thanks, Matt, and this indeed is Brett Johnson with AM 950 Radio as we're joined by our Tuesday guest, Patrick Kulikin. He is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer as we're going to be talking through some of the big Minnesota political stories. So, Patrick, good to have you back on the show.
Good to be here.
Absolutely, and you can follow his work and others of the great writers over at Minnesota Reformer. The website is minnesotareformer.com. So, I want to dive into a piece that Ricardo Lopez and Dina Winter were working on for the Reformer, and that has to do with how Republicans are going to try to govern amid this era of insurrection. Hard to believe I'm even reading that sentence as part of a news story right now. But it is kind of this weird balancing act that Republicans are going to have to try to do here in 2021 and 2022, where on one hand, they don't want to alienate their base of, well, people who are in support of the insurrection versus also not trying to alienate everybody else who doesn't agree with the idea of overthrowing the U.S. government. So as Ricardo and Dina wrote about, Patrick, yeah, this is quite the balancing act Republicans are going to have to try to go through here in 2021 and 22.
Right, as they cited, there's polling showing that a majority of Republicans think that the election was stolen from President Trump. The Pew, which is a highly respected pollster, reports that some about 45% of Republicans think that President Trump has acted either, I think, good or excellent since his conduct has been good or excellent since the election. So that's kind of where the base of the party is. whereas the rest of the country is someplace else. The rest of the country, I think, is revolted by what they saw on January 6th. And if nothing else, very ready to move on and embrace a new presidency. And so Republican politicians now, they have to strike that balance between the electorate as a whole and their base. And keep in mind that the types of folks who are most active in party politics are often the ones who are the most ideologically committed. So in other words, when, let's say, Senator Paul Gazelka, as he begins to consider running for governor, he's going to be out talking to the types of kind of precinct captains, the type of people who are going to show up at caucus meetings. They're the ones who are very often going to be really most in on the Trump train and think that he ought to stick around in politics. They think the election was stolen. They confer no legitimacy on the new government of Joe Biden and so forth. So on the one hand, he's got to somehow appease those folks. And on the other hand, he's got to be looking toward a broader electorate who don't share those opinions at all. And so how do you do that? I don't know. I mean, it's not a new issue necessarily, because there's always that tension between appealing to a broader electorate and appealing to your base. But it just seems to be more extreme when the base of the voter, the base of your party, at least seems to tolerate an armed insurrection of the United States Capitol.
And just to be clear, this is completely of the Republicans' own making. This is at least me speaking right here. When you're embracing a president who, yeah, is saying we need to overthrow the election, well, this is what you're going to get with the base that listens to this type of person. So, yeah, it really does put a lot of these Republican politicians, not just in Minnesota, but nationally, in a very difficult position as some of them seek higher office. And among them, as you said, is Paul Gazelka, who is rumored to be seeking the gubernatorial nomination in 2022 for Republicans. And I kind of wonder if this balancing act could end up hurting them and maybe even opening the door for more outsiders like a Mike Lindell, who won't be having an elected position and trying to run that balancing act between appealing to the base and then appealing to everybody else who thinks they're absolutely nuts. So, yeah, I am kind of curious if maybe this does open the door to people who are outside of politics, maybe not even necessarily Mike Lindell, but maybe another business person for trying to seek higher office for Republicans.
Right. I mean, do you really want to be in this political sphere right now, especially if you're a Republican, where you're having to, again, appeal to that base while also trying to govern with the rest of the country? That's a good question, and you also make a good point that it's not as if this happened by itself. For months, Republican elected officials and party leaders have gone along with Trump's baseless claims of election fraud, and then they shouldn't be surprised when their own voters actually believe them and then take up arms. We have a guy who's quoted in the story makes a good point. He says, well, he's a Republican kind of rank and file and guy, and he says, if the election was stolen, like, shouldn't we be, shouldn't we have an insurrection? It's not a bad question. And then this was always the danger of the claims of election fraud. As I said, a week after the election, when we see other countries where the claims of election fraud are made, we often see the folks making those claims take up arms.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's exactly what we saw back on January 6th here at the U.S. Capitol. Talking about what's happening now at the state legislature, switching gears now as we're speaking with Patrick Koulikan, editor-in-chief, the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com. So let's talk about now the next legislative session, because as we remember from the many special sessions we had during 2020, Senate Republicans made several attempts to try to pull back the emergency powers that have been given to Governor Tim Walz. And it looks like they're going to try this same thing again of stripping Walz of his emergency powers, but they could be taking a little bit of a different approach, and this time focusing on, well, the enforcement powers of the emergency declarations that Governor Tim Walz has made. So definitely an interesting strategy that Republicans are going with in the Senate to try to rein in Tim Walz.
Yeah, I noticed on the calendar for the Judiciary Committee, they want to pass some kind of resolution that just says that only the legislature can assign criminal penalties. And what they're referring to is Walz in enforcing with the Attorney General his executive orders, for instance, closing restaurants and bars. They've decreed some of these violations of the executive orders to be gross misdemeanors. And Republicans in the legislature are saying, no, only the legislature can make that determination. It's an interesting constitutional question, and it gives them another chance to kind of show, again, show their base of voters that they're standing up to Walz. Although in this case, I mean, I tend to think that Senator Warren Limmer actually sincerely believes that this is legislative prerogative and that Walz has overstepped on this.
And speaking of another idea of Republicans trying to stand up to Governor Tim Walz and override some of his powers, this has to do with a new clean car initiative that the governor is trying to put in the state, where right now we have the Republican Senate majority basically calling them California emission standards. So tell us exactly, what exactly are these new standards that Governor Walz is trying to implement and what Republicans are trying to do to either ditch them or make sure Minnesota doesn't follow them?
Right. So there's 14 states, including California, which is why they say California, where they have emission standards that mandate that dealers carry more low emission and no emission automobiles, and the governor's interpretation is that he can do this by regulatory fiat, for lack of a better word, and Republicans oppose this effort, and so they are they're having a hearing this week in which they say they're going to kind of put some scrutiny to these quote unquote California emission standards. I think there's probably, there might be litigation on this, we're probably going to wind up with a clean car standard, in my estimation.
Speaking with Patrick Coulican of the Minnesota Reformer about some news happening at the state legislature, and something you wrote about this morning in your newsletter is talking about how there will be no in-person lobbying going on at the Capitol. And you would think that would make most people happy, at least including me on the surface, that, great, we're not going to have any more lobbyists at the Capitol. But you have a little bit of a different take on this in terms of what lobbying can actually get done at the state legislature and how it doesn't always necessarily favor big businesses. So talk a little bit about what you wrote with this idea of not having any in-person lobbying at the Capitol and what that means.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of us would think that a legislative session without lobbyists sounds like the best thing in the world, because you get elected representatives all together and they can just make decisions based on the evidence and the best ideas and so forth. My sense, and I certainly have written plenty of stories about the malign influence of lobbyists, especially from the powerful corporations. I can think of a piece I wrote in 2018 about the big pharma, the drug industry, really pushing back on opioid legislation and the influence that they had. But there's also something to consider when we talk about lobbyists. I mean, that also includes plenty of good guys, if you will. Lutheran Social Service and Catholic Charities have their lobbyists, the teachers union and the nurses union too. And really the system is set up in such a way that we're all in various interest groups, and they represent various interest groups, and they're sort of our voice at the Capitol. Now, we can say that certain voices are too loud at the Capitol because of their money, but the reality is that lobbyists, they do speak for lots of different interest groups, and they also play an important role in the legislative process because there's often so much going on at the Capitol. There's just too many issues for legislators to be masters of, and you might have an issue where two interest groups are sort of in conflict. I recall an instance back in when I was working in Nevada where a lot of scrap metal was being stolen, or not just scrap metal, but copper wire out of housing developments and that kind of thing. And the home builders wanted to make tougher penalties for stealing copper and also crack down on the recycling companies that were purchasing it because they were obviously sort of in a quiet way they were party to the crime, and the lawmakers told the home builders and the recycling companies, you just get together and cut a deal. So there you had two interest groups, and there was a problem, and the interest groups were going to come to some kind of compromise and solve it because the lawmakers have, frankly, more important things to do, you know, especially this year as they're trying to decide on a budget. So you get all of these conflicts between groups of people, and lobbyists are pretty good at coming up with compromise language and that makes everybody happy or at least less angry. and that frees up lawmakers because, you know, there's 100 things that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, most certainly. Yeah, there's more to it than I think a lot of people might imagine. And I'm kind of curious, too, as to what some of these lobbyists are doing to try to keep their influence, because the scenario I'm thinking about is that often at the Capitol, we're familiar with all sorts of interest groups, and I'm not just talking about, like, big business interest groups, but as you said, teachers' unions or others that might be protesting in the Capitol Rotunda, where oftentimes we hear the chanting from outside the door. And I wonder, without that, if some of these lobbyist groups could end up getting more influence because perhaps they have more of an ability to connect with the state legislatures remotely. I don't know, just what you wrote in the newsletter kind of got me thinking about this, that maybe this isn't necessarily the best thing in the world to not have in-person lobbying.
Yeah, I mean, the groups that rally in the rotunda and we hear them chanting, you know, they have an impact. And I think it's not a great development that they are essentially silenced. The people who still will have influence are those with relationships. So if you can set up a Zoom call with or with a legislator or you can text a legislator, you're going to have influence. But yeah, we're not going to be able to do those, you know, get 1,000 people in the rotunda and make some noise. You know, I think that probably hurts the grassroots groups the most, like you said, the teachers and Isaiah and other groups like that. But certainly the gun owners caucus is and the Second Amendment folks, they often make a strong show at the Capitol, and veterans. And I mean, there's a day for everybody at the Capitol. And what I think is key in Minnesota is that the power and the influence at the Capitol is fairly diffuse. And by that I mean, 3M is obviously a player at the Capitol, but so are public interest, so are public unions, and so are environmentalists. And so it's a fairly decent balance. I talked about my experience in Nevada, where there was really only one lobby that mattered in the end, and that was the casino gambling industry. And that's where you get really nefarious sort of legislative fixes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the session ends up with this, with this being our first full session without really having any sorts of in-person interactions, at least to the extent that we're normally used to, because at least during part of the 2020 session, we did have, well, so-called normal circumstances. So a full session under these remote circumstances, yeah, it could be interesting to see what happens at the Capitol. Hey, that's Patrick Coulican. He is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource to find out what's happening with Minnesota politics. Website is minnesotareformer.com. Hey, Patrick, really appreciate the time today.
Good to be here.
All right, we'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Patrick Coulican from Minnesota Reformer joining us. Outstanding as always, Patrick. We do appreciate it. One quick thing here before I want to get into the break. Yesterday, I brought up the interview that Roshini Rajkumar had done for different radio station, WCCO, with Bob Kroll, the outgoing union head. And he did this interview, and it was such a softball. It was such a garbage interview. It really was. One of the things I brought up was that basically Bob Kroll was saying that George Soros was behind any criticism of him. Like, and I brought up the point when he said this that, oh, yeah, you think George Soros is waking up every day and saying, what's the union head at the police department in Minneapolis up to today? Come on, man. No, he's not. But it did not actually point out that the George Soros controls these leftist people is an anti-Semitic trope that the Republicans have gone to over and over and over again to try to basically, well, they vilify the Jewish faith. Oh, it's the Jews controlling the media. The Jews are controlling the Democrats. That's kind of the narrative. And he says this in the interview, and at no point does Roshini Rajkumar come back and say, wait a minute here, whoa, 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 you're going down the anti-Semitic route, nor, I don't believe in it, as pointed out to on a Twitter feed here, that at no point has so far have they come on out and said, okay, yeah, clearly we condone the anti-Semitic comments about George Soros put forward by Bob Kroll. I want to make sure I mention that, because that I did kind of bury the lead there. I mean, I was kind of more ripping on Bob Kroll's neurotic, psychopathic, everybody's after me sort of mentality. And I skipped past the fact that that was pretty anti-Semitic. Yeah, it was pretty, you just basically saying, well, George Soros, please. Do better, please. Please do better. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Still nothing on pardons yet. Hopefully we'll have something here. Nothing on pardons yet. We'll also get manufacturing. Trump failed there, and the Minnesota coronavirus update. I'll get to that as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Get things done.
RG.
AM 950 weather. I'm Patrick Lulia. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 7 above. Then Wednesday, partial sunshine but warming up to 38 degrees. Nightingale at 26th and Lindale is our Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. Offerings include the famous Nightingale burger and fries and so much more. View the menu at nightingalempls.com and call 612-354-7060 to place your order today.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Patrick, have you seen the lineup for Biden's inauguration, the full list of stars?
I have. That's fantastic.
Lady Gaga, Jennifer Lopez, and Garth Brooks. And boy, Garth Brooks is you know, I really like Garth Brooks. I'm not a big country music fan, but I like Garth Brooks. They're all coming on out. His other stars, Tom Hanks, Demi Lovato, Bruce Springsteen, Kerry Washington, Eva Longoria, Lin-Manuel Miranda, among them. You know, hey, we all love Scott Baio and all, but, you know, there was a certain lack of star power. Meatloaf is fine, sure. But yeah, apparently this infuriated Trump. Last night, Trump got wind of the full list of people showing up. Because if you don't, okay, so he was going to, he wanted to have a military, the traditional military send-off. But because he's not going to the inauguration, the military said, no, we're not going to do that. We don't have the manpower. We're not going to. We're at inauguration events. We're not going to just come on out there and give you the traditional inauguration send-off. We don't do that. So he lost that. Then he were creating this other event. It sounds like hardly anyone has accepted. Most people are fleeing the idea of this, you know, kind of the idea of you know, going to this farewell because it just, you know, the emperor's, you know, we all see the emperor has no clothes now.
Ew.
But apparently last night he got a win. So who's showing up for that loser? No one's going to show up for Joe. Tom Hanks? Lady Gaga? Garth Brooks? And to put it, you know, there were, I mean, even on W, there were a lot of celebrities that came on out. It's not, I mean, this really was a you know, attack on, you know, no one likes Trump. No one likes Trump. Outside of, you know, the people, like I said, you're somewhere on the racism scale. Most of Trump's fans are somewhere on the racist scale. One side of that's burning cross wearing sheets. The other side of it is I want to be able to you know, and when I say racist, it's racism, sexism, misogyny. It's you know, anti-gay. They want to be able to still smack their secretary on the caboose and talk about how hot she is without getting in trouble. They want to laugh occasionally at the N-word joke. I mean, that's kind of thing. I mean, not there. And they say, "Well, I'm not racist. I'm not burning a cross." Yeah, but you're racist light. You like Christopher Columbus. You're like, why doesn't everyone like Christopher Columbus? You get infuriated when people try to talk about Native American issues. You know, that sort of thing. You think that other people getting the same rights as you is somehow you losing your rights, which is absolute garbage. So, yeah, that's that. You love them. No one else does. Meatloaf. Who doesn't love meatloaf? Delicious. With a little ketchup on it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's time for us to come to do one of the things, obviously, as well. We can look back on Trump's record when it comes to signature issues that he was going to dominate. Now his term is finally ending, and let's examine Donald Trump's performance on a key promise he made 4 years ago to bring manufacturing jobs, especially from China and Mexico, back to the United States. Evaluation first, then a grade. None of this is supported by facts, by the way. Team Trump's policies encouraged offshore jobs, not that you'd likely know from following the news. In a State of the Union address last year, Trump proclaimed a blue-collar boom in jobs. It was a fact-free nonsense. That did not happen, not ever, even before Trump's incompetent, malicious pandemic response threw tens of millions of people, including many factory workers, under the unemployment lines. Even before the coronavirus outbreak, he'd promised benefits of the president's $1.9 trillion tax cuts hadn't materialized and manufacturing had fallen into a slump. Representative Don Beyer of Virginia, a Democrat, wrote in a report, after a brief upturn in 2018, manufacturing had fallen into a slump by the first quarter of 2019. Factory job losses continued into 2020 as a chart from the federal government shows. You can't see the chart, obviously, it's radio. But it will show that Texas got a lot of jobs, Michigan got a few, and every other state lost tons of jobs, including Illinois and Indiana really got hammered. Our trade in goods with Mexico had a negative shortfall of almost $103 billion in the first 11 months of last year. That's 75% worse than the $59 billion shortfall under Obama in 2016. So there you go. The negative shortfall got worse under Trump. Using 2019 as a benchmark to avoid pandemic effects, the shortfall grew by 72% compared to 2016. This shows an abject failure of Trump's Mexico trade policy measured on his terms. Under Trump's job stability and quality, pay, fringe benefits, working conditions suffered. Job quality in the U.S. remains tepid. The Coalition for Prosperous America reported this month, the coalition promotes balanced trade deals. Jeff Ferry, a coalition chief economist and creator of its job quality index, said on January 8th that restoring the health of our manufacturing sector is the best way to restore prosperity to millions of middle class and struggling Americans. Trump's 2016 campaign promised about manufacturing jobs raised the hopes of people who worked in the 91,000 American factories that have closed since 1997 under congressional policies that came, some cases, subsidized moving jobs offshore. But the carnage continued. In the 2 years from 2016 under Obama through 2018 under Trump, 1,800 American factories closed. Overall, the U.S. has suffered a net loss of more than 91,000 manufacturing plants and nearly 5 million manufacturing jobs since 1997. Most of those factories disappeared between 2016 and 2018. Trump's 2017 tax cut added to those subsidies by enabling American firms to earn untaxed or minimal profits as long as they invest offshore. Minorities were hardest hit by the losses of factory jobs to China. Scott estimated that 958,000 minority factory workers were displaced, with wage-related losses of $10,485 per worker, and that was in 2011. Today, jobs and pay are worse, not better, for blue-collar minority workers. The problem with Trump's promise with the wish for more factory jobs is that with the two sources of such manufacturing jobs, one is the diminished demand for goods, which in turn reduces the demand for workers to be making, packaging, shipping, and marketing those goods. The other, what manufacturing there is being done with fewer workers. Demand is weak because 90% of Americans before the pandemic were losing ground as the cost of living grew faster than their incomes and job security evaporated in one industry after another. The failure of political leaders in both parties to adapt to the shift from factory jobs that paid well to union contracts to moving manufacturing work offshore began long before Trump. So did the rise of low-paid, unskilled, semi-skilled jobs as devastated the finances of most families. Trump promised voters he would reverse these trends. The vast majority, the bottom 90% of Americans, had less real income in 2018 than in 1973, the peak year for the share of production jobs in union shops. The 2018 household collected 4% less money than the 1973 households, the equivalent of having no income for at least 2 weeks of 2018. Even worse for most American incomes fell under Trump despite his baseless claims, often uncritically repeated in news reports, of a huge rise in incomes. In 2018, the nearly 87 million taxpayers making less than $50,000 had to get by on $307 less per household than in 2016, the year before Trump took office, my analysis of the official data shows. Once again, reading off this report, the 57% of American households were better off under Obama contradicts Trump's often repeated claim he created the best economy ever until the pandemic. To be sure, there was a lot of income growth, but it was largely among the fast-growing ranks of 1 million and up households. The numbers grew 27% in 2019 compared to 2016, IRS data shows. The economic pain of the vast majority can be seen in broad economic changes that disfavor manufacturing workers, especially those in the 97,000 factories that have closed since 1997. In December, America had 12.3 million manufacturing jobs, the same as the summer of 1941, which was before America entered World War II. Back then in America, we had 204 million fewer people than now. So we had 204 million fewer people than we have today, and we have basically the same amount of manufacturing jobs as we had back in 1941. Factory jobs peaked at 19.5 million under Jimmy Carter, 1979. There were 103 million fewer Americans then. In 2020, we lost 577,000 manufacturing jobs, a huge toll not just on those workers but on the communities where they were concentrated. The U.S. has experienced a net loss of manufacturing plants in every year since 1998. The related problem with Trump's focus on China, it missed how America's trade imbalance with Vietnam is growing and how rising labor costs in China are causing it to lose factory jobs to Vietnam. Vietnam is gaining massive traction to the U.S. manufactured good business, said the coalition's Kenneth Raposa. That's because it's cheaper in Vietnam than in China, so even many Chinese firms are shifting production there. The key trend, Raposa wrote, China is slipping in our supply chains, but Mexico and Vietnam are largely taking their place. Overall, and considering only the period before the pandemic began, Trump's rhetoric got him votes from gullible citizens in 2016. But today we have fewer jobs and less pay, the opposite of his promise. His grade is an F. But hey, God forbid the facts actually show up and bite you Republican idiots in the caboose. You guys want to make, he did everything perfect. He's annihilated our trade markets because you don't go into something like that pretending you can wield the big stick. Maybe back when Teddy Roosevelt was there and you're talking about military matters, maybe you can get away with that. But you forget something. There are too many other countries on the planet. And if you become an uptight, arrogant jackass and you say, we're not going to take your products, the first thing they're going to say is, okay, we'll get our products over from them and we'll take ourselves and we'll be doing fine without you. And they sit there and they go, habida, habida, habida. Come on, guys. Reminder that Trump himself, realizing the damage he'd done to our ag markets, was begging China to start taking American products again. Was begging them. Conservative trade policy is the worst trade policy. There's a port in Scotland that was built, was it 3 years ago? And it's basically a big fish warehouse where the boats come in, unload the fish they've caught, and they basically put them into tubs, and it's designed for like 200,000 tubs of fish per day. This is when Britain was part of the EU, and so there were tons of trucks that were coming up there. Today, there's like 200 tubs of fish there. That's it. In a facility, it's this massive facility. And there's just this one little corner they're using because no one from Europe is coming into Britain to get their fish. Why do they have to? You're not part of the European Union. And so they're all sitting there going, not only is the investment into the building and the facility to have this is an absolute waste now, but now you don't have your market. The markets are closed. The only people that are buying are local people. Well, that's exactly what happened here. And I know Republicans are going, we had the most perfect, all the manufacturing jobs were back. Every company was open again. Every industry was building their own products here in the United States. And we were all back. It was perfect. The reality was it wasn't. It's worse now, dramatically worse now than when Trump came into office. He did not bring manufacturing jobs back. He's crippled this economy for decades to come. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a final break. Come on back. Minnesota coronavirus update, and I'll try my best to see if we have anything on the pardons, if they're out yet, who's gotten pardons. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. So disconnected. I'm never gonna check. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Still nothing on the pardons here. My guess is I'm wondering if he's holding off, if he's going to try to pardon all the people that stormed the Capitol. I can't. It would be on brand for the guy. It'd be on brand for the guy to pardon a bunch of cop killers. It would be on brand for the guy. We'll have to see. Fred is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in on prison reform. Welcome on in, Fred.
Hi. Yeah, a lot of people I know on the left are kind of mystified about why the GOP is suddenly into prison reform. And the thing with that is there's a lot of powerful white Christian evangelicals who got their start in the prison ministries. And they have a lot of ties to GOP politicians, and they recruit right from the white supremacist gangs in the prisons.
Well, and yeah, thanks, Fred. I appreciate the phone call. There's always a reason for Republicans. I don't care what it is, whatever the issue. There's always a reason for what they do. And most of the times it's politics. It's most of the times it's ignorance and stupidity a lot of the time, too. So it just is what they are. Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Key measures of the COVID-19 pandemic in Minnesota have declined after a brief post-holiday blip. The positivity rate of diagnostic testing in the infectious disease dropped 5.4%. The Minnesota Department of Health on Tuesday reported 6 total COVID-19 deaths. That, hey, not making light of any of the 6 people who died. That we should remember them, for goodness sakes. There's 6 people that died. But the only 6 deaths, only the second daily count in single digits since November 2nd. 922 infections with the coronavirus that caused respiratory disease. Once again, below 1,000. Doesn't mean for the 922 that have been diagnosed that it's going to be an easy haul. But overall, when you're looking at the numbers, that is a better number than we've had. State totals in pandemic are now 5,945 deaths, 448,268 diagnosed infections. More of the 200,000 people in Minnesota have received the first dose of the 2 doses of Pfizer or Moderna vaccines of COVID-19. At least 38,235 had completed the series. I'm very happy about that. Long way to go, though. The vaccination progress came on Tuesday as the state prepared to make doses available beyond the initial priority group. They suffered the care workers who are elevated risk of infection and long-term care residents who have suffered 64% of the Minnesota COVID-19 deaths. Limited doses are being provided by appointment only at 9 sites later this week to people 65 and older. Educators and child care workers also have limited access to vaccines through this expansion. Minnesota expected to receive roughly 60,000 more first doses of COVID-19 this week and diverted 12,000 doses to this expansive group. The state reported that 46.2% of its immediate available supply of 516,675 vaccines doses have been administered. The remainder includes doses being shipped to the state or already assigned to upcoming vaccination appointments. So, positivity rate of diagnostic testing peaked at 15.5 in November, after declining to 4.7 in December, then rose to 7.5 in early January before starting to decline again. So that's good. It does bug me that we have a lot of Republicans who have basically spent the entire pandemic insisting the pandemic's not a big deal, but are running to the front of the line to get their vaccination. If you want to show me that you're putting your money where your mouth is, go to the end of the line. You don't think this is a big problem, then say, you know what? Everyone else can get vaccinated. I'll go last. I don't think this is a big issue. The fact that you people are running to the front of the line, trying to push elderly people out of the way like you're George Costanza in a building on fire, that points me to the reality that you already know what's coming out of your pie hole is absolute garbage. So you should go to the end of the line. Show me your integrity, Republicans. I know that's just a pipe dream, isn't it? I know it's just a pipe dream. So nothing yet on the pardons. I'm looking. Forgive me. I'm shuffling through my briefs. Nothing yet. No pardons there. Maybe I'll get mine. Maybe I'll get my pardon. Maybe I don't want to say what it's for, but I didn't know those pandas would bite. Nothing yet. He has to release them today. So the longer he goes, makes me wonder if these are really going to be ugly pardons. I mean, make Mark Rich look like nothing. We'll have to find out. Native Roots Radio is up next. We are back with Stein on a Wednesday. Till then, see ya.